Hello and welcome to The Jiffy, a podcast about upstate New York that really takes you places. Well, it's Earth Day today as I record this, and I'm out in a very scenic place, standing under a tree that I think might be a red oak tree that could have, that may very well be standing here for hundreds of years. It's a beautiful landscape of carriage roads, and I'm looking out at an incredible mansion and this singular view of the Hudson River. It's a bit cloudy today, although the clouds are clearing out and the sunset. It might be an incredible sunset, a little misty. It's been a cloudy winter, all winter, to be honest. But I'll tell you where I am in a minute. First, I want to set the scene. Because, you know, in my previous episode, I talked to Dr. Harvey Flad, a professor emeritus of geography at Vassar College. Dr. Flad talked with me about the idea of the geographic imagination, about how our idea of a place, our sense of place, can be informed by all sorts of inputs, but especially images. And as far as the Hudson Valley goes, there was a very influential school of artists that helped build this idea of the Hudson Valley or upstate New York. It was called the Hudson River School of Painters, and they depicted this place thoroughly. It was made up of painters named Thomas Cole and Frederick Church, Asher B. Durand, Albert Bierstadt, and a few others. Frederick Church may have been the most famous American artist in the mid-1800s whatsoever. And so on the occasion of Frederick Church's 200th birthday this year, he's a landscape painter who used nature to share his views of the world with the people of America. I'm here today on Earth Day 2026, standing in front of his masterwork of landscape design and residential architecture. It's called Olana, and we'll get into that in a following episode about the history of that name. But it's just an incredible, incredible place. It sits on 250 acres. It's a mansion on a hill just south of Hudson, New York. The house itself was built beginning 1870, and Church and his family moved in 2 years later. They were living in a house down the hill called Cozy Cottage. And, you know, we always love a cozy place here on the podcast. But Olana is really Church's vision. He called it Persian adapted to the Occident. And it's a mixture of Victorian structure and Middle Eastern decorative motifs, colored brick, ceramic tile, intricate exterior stenciling that Church designed himself based on his travels. I mean, he would go to places like Beirut, Jerusalem, Damascus, and sketch all of this Islamic architecture and art and then bring it home and implement it here in this place. So it's sort of his imagination of what a house could be in the Hudson Valley mixed with all these other worldly sights and scenes. I mean, there are towers, asymmetrical architecture. There's a huge porch, all these awnings. I mean, it really doesn't look like anything else you'd see in the Hudson Valley. And then the landscape around it, he's got carriage roads, this lake he dredged from a swamp, and thousands of trees that he planted. That was all designed by Church, too. Church may have been known around the world as a landscape painter, but here, as he wrote his friend Erastus Dow Palmer in an 1884 letter, he said he could, quote, make more and better landscapes in this way than by tampering with canvas and paint in the studio. Olana is a National Historic Landmark and is considered the most completely intact artist design environment in the United States. And it was actually almost destroyed and razed by developers. And we'll get into that story of preservation in the next episode. But first, since this is his 200th birthday, the Olana Partnership is calling it Frederick Church 200, I wanted to kick off the first part in a three-part series by looking at this legacy, this image-making of the Hudson Valley, by looking at Frederick Church. And during this Frederick Church 200 celebration, there are a lot of organizations and institutions across the country and internationally participating, including the Albany Institute of History and Art, which, as it happens, is co-presenting this podcast episode today. And in their archives, the Albany Institute has correspondences from Church, and one letter specifically contains one of his more famous quotes about Olana. I mean, anytime you enter a tour at Olana, you'll hear it. Here's the quote. Almost an hour this side of Albany is the center of the world. I own it. Church wrote that letter to his friend Palmer. And Palmer was a renowned artist himself at the time. He was a sculptor based in Albany, self-taught, which was almost unheard of for a sculptor of his stature at that time. He'd started out as a carpenter and made cameo carvings before transitioning to large-scale marble work. And by the 1850s, he was one of the most celebrated sculptors in America. And his work is actually here at Alana as well. It's a series of bas relief and full-length statue of a youth called Sleep, which you can still see in the court hall today. But it's the story of these two men, a painter and a sculptor, one in Hudson and one in Albany, who kept up correspondence for decades. And what comes through in those letters is a real love for one another, a real affection, a mutual respect, and a shared aesthetic sensibility. And this relationship is the subject of a forthcoming exhibition at the Albany Institute called Your Friend Frederick E. Church. And it's Diane Shuchuk's job to put it all together. She's the chief curator and director of curatorial affairs at the Albany Institute of History and Art, and she's spent her career at the historic houses and museums of the Hudson Valley. Before Albany, she was at the Columbia County Historical Society in Kinderhook, where she oversaw properties like the Lucas Van Allen House. And before that, at Clermont, the Livingston family seat along the river in Germantown. That means she has spent years in Frederick Church's backyard and years now in Erastus Thou Palmer's backyard, which makes her one of the few people who can really thread all of these stories together. And so I wanted to know, what is her process like to write the narrative of an exhibition like this? How does she pull from that extensive archive, find a story that is cohesive and ready for an audience, but not just to share the story, but visualize it in objects, to immerse a visitor into it, and also tell it in a way that's both locally oriented and also connected to a much larger story and project? Well, for that, we're going to follow Church's trail up to Albany. It's probably a commute he would have made many times to visit Erastus Thou Palmer, probably on a steamboat or a train, but we're going to drive in my car. Instead of seeing his friend Palmer, we're going to go see my friend Diane Shuchuk at the Albany Institute of History and Art. Where are we going?
We are going back to the curatorial hallway, which houses the library, the archives, parts of collection storage. And Diane's office is back here. As you can see, it's also kind of the, not graveyard, but, you know, there's a lot of pedestals and bonnets and stuff waiting for their...
A staging area.
This is Marissa Espy. She's the director of communications at the Albany Institute of History and Art.
I feel safe.
This is Laura.
She's been very helpful in organizing all of these interviews, so thank you, Marissa.
James, I'm recording. Doing some audio, we're going to make a podcast
it's like
episode.
In the field, so it sounds like all the, you know, ambient, all the ambient sounds of like the doors opening and, oh, we're walking through the hallway like that. Yeah.
You see, Marissa gets it. She's been very helpful in organizing calendars with Diane. As you can understand, Diane's very busy right now, especially right now.
Oh, no.
So what do we want to do?
Do you want to go?
Because you and I will just get off on a tangent about people we know. So unless we kind of we'll just start.
Now, when Diane, I have to be honest, when Diane and I get together, we typically gab. It's just something that happens. We start talking about all the people we know. We know a lot of mutual friends and stories. And so we start sharing stories. And we get sidetracked. We easily get sidetracked. So it was very helpful that Marissa was keeping us on track. And what we wanted to talk about today here was really how she builds an exhibition from scratch. Something that could be really complex if you let it get out of control, but Diane doesn't let it get out of control, and I really wanted to know what her process was. So we sat down together in the archives so that I could pick her brain.
This has to go on here.
And then I think, you know, the way I'm thinking about it is like, how do you write an exhibition? I'm thinking about your process, and we just hear about how you're how this concept
how do you narrow it down?
Yes, how do
right.
you think?
Because there are so many treasures in this collection. So how do I take that and turn them into a story that I think our visitors will enjoy?
This is something that I think is really interesting too. Is you know a lot of these types of museum shows will look at an aesthetic or a movement or place it in.
We're completely
in
the opposite with this show.
Yeah, you're doing it with this human.
Correct.
You know, it's so human first.
The friendship story. because everybody loves that. And it's relatable. It's very relatable to hear, to read these letters and to see how much they care deeply about one another, how they often begged each other to come visit them. They pleaded, bring your wives. They also love their wives, which is another part of the story that I particularly love. They respected their wives' opinions. Each Palmer and Church each had 6 children. They were fathers as well that cared deeply about those children. And those children visited each other as adults. Churches really cared for Palmer's children. They named their children after one another. And they sort of sympathized with them when a child died, sadly, because they each lost children during the 19th century. So that's a very part of the human story and how they reacted to those deaths, whether in letters that they wrote or within pieces of art they created. Frederick Church painted a painting when his namesake Frederick Church Palmer died at the age of 2. It's called Evening Star. And that's an incredibly moving painting. It's a very small painting. We're bringing it back to Albany for the first time.
From where? From Chicago?
It's out in the outskirts of Chicago. Yeah, it's in a private collection there. So we're thrilled to have it back in its hometown. And Church painted it as a memorial to this child named after him. And it actually, even later on, was exhibited in the 1864 or 65 Sanitary Relief Exhibition here in Albany that benefited the Civil War.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's start at the beginning. So we're talking about Frederick Church and Erastus Dow Palmer. And I wanted to situate Church in the art history of New York and the Hudson River. And so he's a part of the Hudson River School of Painters. Can you tell me about just like, what are we looking at? What are we talking about when we think about the Hudson River School of Painters?
Right. So if anybody was to ever come to the Albany Institute, one of our prized galleries is our Hudson River School Gallery. It's incredibly beautifully installed in a salon style with the beautiful gold frames against the purple background. And you see over 100 landscapes created in the Hudson Valley or by artists that practiced in the Hudson Valley. This was a term that was developed in the 19th century that wasn't beloved by everybody. It's more of an art history term today. It's very much an American art movement. And everybody at that time was very proud of being Americans, especially if Frederick Church and Erastus Dow Palmer were considered quintessential American artists because of the subjects they chose, the places they worked, and the art they produced. So our collection also goes back to Thomas Cole and even earlier. Our collection is very strong in Cole's drawings and paintings because this institution has had a relationship with the Cole family going back to the 1950s, when descendants of Cole gave us things or we purchased things from someone we call Aunt Florence, Florence Cole Vincent. And the staff here at the time knew enough that Cole was going to be important someday before he actually was as important as he is today.
Well, that's really interesting. So what years are we talking about if we're saying the Hudson River School was a movement that sort of began around here and then faded out of trend? At this time, is it like the mid-1800s? Because I'm also trying to look at it in terms of American history. Is the Civil War happening? Right. So, and also what was happening in New York, upstate development and this image-making idea of what this area was like. So what are we talking about in terms of—
So the first generation Hudson River School artists are probably from the 1820s, and there's a second generation of movement later on. Frederick Church is part of the second generation. We have representative pieces of art by all of these men, and they're all men. Although there were women painting at the same time, they were very well known during their time, but not so much today. But we're changing all that by starting to buy Hudson River School artists by women artists. So we have Sarah Cole in the gallery right now. Thomas Cole's sister is represented in our gallery. She too is considered a Hudson River School painter. The two works we have are copies she did of her brother's work. So I think that the period is really from the second quarter of the 19th century up until the 1870s. I mean, Church is still painting and Palmer is still producing, although Palmer is not a Hudson River School artist. He just worked geographically in the area. And then we have to throw him in because the exhibit is about Palmer and as a sculptor through the 1870s probably. And you can go a little later. It depends what artist we're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, he has deep Albany roots and he was going up and down and he's inspired by what's happening here. So tell me about who he is.
So Erastus Dow Palmer was Albany's premier sculptor in the 19th century. He was born in Western New York near Utica, but he moved to Albany about 1848, 1849. He started his career as a carpenter, and then he carved cameo portraits of people in Utica. And then he came to Albany to carve cameo portraits of Albany's prominent citizens who commissioned him to do that. So we have a number of cameo brooches of portraits that he carved. He then moved into sculpture. Then he had so many commissions. Albany is a center, as the capital of New York State. A lot of people wanted their portraits done, and portraits cast in marble, portraits carved in marble. And Palmer took that, and he just really managed to get a lot of commissions. His studio in Albany was a central local, like a place where they all gathered together. When you look at his studio record books and his all his letters we own, you can see that he's not only friends with Frederick Church, which is the thesis of my exhibition, really. He's also friends with James and William Hart. He's friends with Sanford Gifford, that he just knows everybody. He did not have a studio in New York City, unlike Church, but he did have a studio here. And he considered himself Albany's sort of, and he was very proud that he never really went to Europe to work. He only went there to cast a large statue of Robert Livingston and Imogen. But other than that, he pretty much studied. He was a self-taught man.
It was at the time other sculptors would go to Italy and like learn from the masters and things, but he didn't. And so did people think, oh, that's, he's a real American or so? Like how did that boost his reputation?
Right. He did not go to Europe to study with them. He just figured it out on his own. But his subjects are very much American subjects. Also these allegorical subjects of faith and resignation are June, but also the White Captive, his most famous sculpture from 1858, and the Indian Maiden. All of these things are very much considered American themes, working in a slightly more classical vein. He was friends with Henry Kirk Brown, John Quincy Adams Ward, and the people that worked in his studio assistants, Richard Park and Charles Calverley, and Lont Thompson went on to have major careers of their own as well. So three of them trained here in Albany, then moved to New York City, and had even bigger careers on a more national stage.
So here, I wanted to know, so we're finding you at a moment when you're in the, what phase of an exhibition are you in right now? Because what I'm really interested in is learning, like, how do you create this? How do you, you're writing a story for visitors to see, and you're going through just like, I can only assume, endless archives and so many possibilities. So what phase are you in right now?
I'm in the panic phase, actually, because the show opens on June 6th, and I've had to do so many other things, but I've been able to come back and really think about this exhibition now. And when Olana approached us and asked how we could participate in this big anniversary year, I immediately came to mind the letters we have. Because our archive is so incredibly rich, it's a very deep archive. The 3D objects really match the paper things in our collection because we are a library with millions of manuscript materials in it. And I knew that we had Fred's letters to Erastus, as I called Erastus da Palmer, and I knew that they were friends. But I didn't really dig deep enough until over a year ago, when I started reading the letters. And the letters are pretty amazing. And the letters, we only have from 1867 to about 1887, but they were friends far longer than that. And as I thought about it, there's the one letter in particular that really struck me that I can read you a little bit about.
Oh, yeah.
That this is, you know, Fred writing to Erastus from Hudson, July 7th, 1869. "My dear Palmer, here I am on my own farm," which I love because they both called their properties the farm before they actually gave them names. "I intended to have stolen a few hours and dropped in upon you all, but was obliged to go to New York." Then he goes on, I rather think I want to see you and yours about this time. They're always pleading to see one another. They always want to make visits to, there's not very far. Think about it. They're getting to each other by either steamboat or train, and they can be at either Hudson or Albany within an hour. But here's the quote that got me, which everybody knows. "Almost an hour this side of Albany is the center of the world. I own it. I am all alone here in the little dining room, enjoying a nice wood fire and thinking how thankful I ought to be to have traveled and returned with my family all well." And I thought that was so sweet because he's writing to his dear friend, and all of these letters are signed, "Your friend, Frederick E. Church." So that became the title of my exhibition. Then I had to develop around that title using the letters and trying to illustrate what they talk about in the letters in sort of a physical reality, like thinking about our gallery spaces and then really going through the treasure trove of manuscripts. And I wanted to go back as far as Thomas Cole because Church was Cole's pupil. And I want to go back to the period of the 1840s, like what brought them to the capital region. This is such a sense of place story too. These two artists who decided to make upstate New York, and I'm using the term upstate, and I know you've been working on that, as a central, like what did Albany look like? What did Catskill look like? So we fortunately, by going through our Thomas Cole papers, I found drawings that Thomas did of Catskill, at the long dock at Catskill, where Church could have docked, the steamboat would have docked, he could have walked up the hill. I also have a beautiful drawing that Cole did of Albany in the 1840s, so people would understand what the city looked like and how busy and cosmopolitan it really was. And then as I experimented with the Cole letters, I found out that there's so many letters written to that Thomas Cole's son, Teddy, writes to Church, or his father, begging Church to come back to come to Catskill, put up a birdhouse for him. He wants to go sketching with him. So I start to really delve into this beautiful relationship with Frederick Church, who was very young at the time. He was a teenager when he studies with Cole, and the relationships he had with the Cole children, which I thought was a very sort of fun, relatable experience. Then I drove it back to the Palmer family.
The big freight elevator.
We are in the big freight elevator. This is my dream come true when we built the storage to have a freight elevator so we can move big paintings around.
You didn't always have this?
We didn't always have this. We had a tiny elevator that's a people elevator and a set of stairs. But when we, like, we're pulling out a desk that Rouses Del Palma made out of storage, and we're going to have to put in the elevator to bring it up to the right floor, and that's a luxury now. I know it's a little thing, but it's a big deal for us.
I asked Diane if she could take us through the galleries as they are now to see what she sees, as she said she's in panic mode, before any of this stuff's installed.
Oh, yeah, the door slamming from storage. We came up the back way, the secret entrance to the galleries, which makes our life easier. Direct access from storage to the galleries. So now we're in the space where there's a big echo, because we're in the 1907 building. So here we are. We're going to take this exhibition down. We're going to get the Fred Church show up. And as I think about, this is like kind of an octagonal gallery. It's a little challenging. There's like four quadrants. But when you first walk into the space from our sculpture court, so you'll be going through the sculpture court, which features other Rouses Palma sculptures that are not making it into the show, but people will be able to get to see.
Ooh, let's do that. Walk me through how you're envisioning it as you have it right now.
Okay.
So take me through what you're seeing.
So as we walk in first, we're into what we call the Square Gallery. It's not a very dramatic, not a very clever name, but it's called the Square Gallery. So I'm envisioning this as sort of this is the entrance to the exhibition, and this is the where I'm going to introduce everybody to both to Rouses and to Fred. And I'm going to talk about the letters and why this exhibition is happening and a little bit about them. But they are so well known that I'm not going to do a whole biographical spin about them. I'm going to put Rouses' desk in here because when I realized we owned it, I love seeing the ink stains on it. This is about letters and to the fact that we have the desk that he made himself that has an inscription from 1876. He probably read the letters on that desk and wrote the letters to Church using that desk. So I want to set the stage for kind of who these two gentlemen were and having examples by both of them in the space. And then we're going to move into kind of the space. But I also have to be very sensitive because this is right off of our sculpture court. And there's a lot of light coming in here and we can't put too many. We have all LED lights in the galleries, but we still want to be sensitive to the light issues. And the things coming on loan to us have very specific light issues. And they have very specific requirements as to how they have to be lit within the 5 to 10 foot candle range for paper items. So we want to be conscious of the things we're borrowing. And so we're going to put things that we own in the space. Then I got to really, we don't often direct people in our galleries. We want them to wander on their own. But in this exhibition, I think I want a direct flow into the room that I'm going to have the Thomas Cole story will be told in one particular gallery, and then Church as a student of Cole's, and introducing the Cole family through the letters and some of the little drawings will be in the next gallery. And that is, we call it that the Spotlight Gallery. Again, not a very glamorous name, because in the past we've just spotlight like certain types of exhibitions, whether it's Alexander Hamilton or anti-suffrage, or smaller themes we can explore in a smaller space.
Can we call one of these galleries the James Cave Instagram feed gallery?
Sure. We can call it that for the time being. I don't know. We'd have to talk to our director of development about what it costs to name a gallery. Yeah, but right now, there's a video going on right now with the current exhibition. So it'll be a quieter gallery. And I think there'll be a case of letters. I'm still sort of on the fence about how many actual letters to show, whether people actually, I like seeing 19th century handwriting. I like making young people try to read it and decipher it because people have lost the art of reading handwriting. So I think I'm going to fill a case with some of the letters because I always feel like that's, when I see a letter, I think about the two people that actually touched it. So to me, the power of the authentic thing. They each read these out loud to their families. Somebody took the ink, wrote a letter to Thomas Cole or to Frederick Church or Rouses Del Palma. And it just, like, what did it witness, you know? I mean, it's of that particular period, so it's you can't get any clearer than somebody's actual words. Because our Palmer collection, we got the contents of Palmer's studio after he passed away through his son, the artist Walter Lump Palmer, an artist unto his own, who actually studied with Frederick Church. So I'm telling the story of the Palmer family with the Church family, again, through these letters, through the photographs, through the gifts they gave one another, through the number of pieces that are at Olana. There are 10 works by Palmer in Olana's collection, which is more than by any other artist in the Olana collection today. So that also told me a story, that they traded art to one another, that I can open up Oh, then I found this great, I was reading Palmer's diaries, which, you know, are not diaries thinking about like, oh, how I felt today, but it's really a document. The diaries are a document of what he did every day. And I opened to March, I can't remember that, March 1873, and he writes, went to churches, and we knew it's not going to church, but it's actually to church's farm in Hudson. And he writes, stayed at church's new house for the first time, which meant Olana, because the church family had moved into Olana in the fall of 1872. So there were some of their first earliest guests were the Palmers, who in the meantime, whenever they would visit, would stay at a different farm cottage on the property or a cozy cottage or somewhere in the valley, but they never stayed up at the big house until 1873. So that was such an exciting thing to think that he spent the time to write in his journal after the day that he stayed at Olana. He didn't use that word yet because it wasn't really, he just stayed at church's house.
It's so interesting because you're going through all these letters. It kind of immerses you into it too. You're spending so much time with them. Did you feel like you're sort of there experiencing Olana for the first time with him as well? Like, what was it like to read all the letters? Did you read them sequentially as if it was like a big book of letters?
I did read them sequentially. We don't have every single letter. We only have one side of the story. We have Church's side of the story to Palmer. There are a few of Palmer's letters at Olana. We're borrowing one for the exhibition to pair with a sculptor we have. But I loved reading because it is very much, it's a travelogue. Because Church is writing to Palmer, describing Petra when he's in Beirut in Syria. And he's describing, there's a 6-page letter in our collection where he describes the topography, how hard it was to draw with Bedouins, who took them into the desert, how scary it was to have that experience of going to a place that wasn't well visited. So then I put myself there. Then we go to the 1880s and 90s when Church is in Mexico. And he's writing to Palmer and he's describing the Mexican scenery and how beautiful it is and why he goes there every year. So that is, it's very much a travelogue too, but it's also very much a, like, oh, I need some wood. I'm coming up to Albany because I need to buy a door, or I'm working on this other project. So very much Fred is coming to Albany on a regular basis to buy building supplies, to consult with people, to build Olana. And because Palmer was a carpenter and built his own house, Appledale, his farmhouse in the country, he consulted with Erastus all the time. They also mentioned going to a secondhand furniture store together as well. And Fred says to Erastus, like, if I come up and go to Runyon's, I'm sure you'll have bought everything out of the store already. So then I had to go and look up in the Albany City directories what that name meant to find out it was a secondhand furniture dealer, which I thought was really great to know that too. So it's reading the letters and then figuring out it's a detective game. Because when they're sort of consoling someone at the death of someone, then I have to go back and trace the family genealogies of the Palmer family, of the Church family, figure out who was born when they died, when they got married, when they had children. So that when they're saying, oh, Maddie's having a really hard time, I can go back and figure out why she's having a hard time. It also, but I love the most about the supplies, like, you know, have Wally come up here. That's Walter. He refers to Walter Lunt Palmer as Wally. And I'll have his paint box ready for him. Where he says the cloud effects are magnificent that day. So I've been able to borrow a painting from Olana State Historic Site that with amazing cloud effects from the same year that this letter was written.
So you're in the weeds of all these letters. What's triggering in your mind and your process? Because now you're thinking, oh, there may be a painting that could correspond to this. And now are you writing it in your mind like, and it could go on this wall here. And I know the gallery space that I'm using and this is how I'm building it out. Like, how are you envisioning it at this stage?
Well, I kind of do sections. So I think about the different sections. I first started to think about, I use index cards. I know it's really old fashioned, but I cut up index cards and then I write the name of every piece that's a potential for the exhibition, whether it's a painting or a letter or a diary or a sketch. So I have one index card that represents every object and I kind of deal them out on the table or on the floor actually in my living room and think about what's the narrative I'm creating. And then I think about the space. I've been here for a very long time, so I know our spaces really well. I know what looks good. I know what can be paired together. And the spaces, there are 4 galleries dedicated to this, but they're kind of smaller galleries. It's not like a big white box. They actually have character, which I kind of like. And I think about the path I want people to follow when they walk into the exhibition so they're not confused. And I think about like, oh, this is a sketch for something. Do I need to find the full length paint, the full painting of that to put in the label copy? You have to front load a lot of that. You have to get all your loan requests in to the state of New York very early in the process of creating an exhibition. So about a year and a half ago, you have to then decide what are the key pieces that I need to borrow to complement what is in our collection already. Because we have such a treasure trove, it's not about finding stuff. It's about narrowing it down, culling it, editing the list I create to make the story tighter. and to then make it more, because I'm deciding what I think you all as visitors will find interesting and fascinating. And also, it's a way to show off our collection, to show everybody that the Albany Institute is an incredibly important institution for researchers and for art historians.
This episode was produced in partnership with the Albany Institute of History and Art. And I want to thank the team for welcoming me in and for Diane for her time. Obviously, she's very busy right now. The show is called Your Friend Frederick E. Church, and it will be on view from June 6th through October 12th as part of the Frederick Church 200 series of events taking place across the country this year. It's pulling from the museum's 72 letters. The show will feature sculpture, drawings, paintings, and manuscripts from their vast collection, paired with public and private loans as well, in some cases reuniting some pieces for the first time in decades. Public programming will include an opening reception for the show on June 5th. Frederick Church biographer Victoria Johnson will present a lecture about Church's work, too. And there's so much more. You can learn more about their calendar of events at albanyinstitute.org. You can also subscribe to my newsletter, thejiffy.xyz. I send out photos and behind-the-scenes extras and other articles and features and interviews with local people. I also produce a monthly curated list of local events that are happening in the arts and sciences of our region. People seem to like that. And right now, I'm giving away prizes to local businesses. It's thejiffy.xyz. You better get in while it's good, okay? Well, that's it for this show. Until next time, as always, I'll see you over on the James Cave Instagram feed.